Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
Proverbs chapter 20 is where we're going to start today with Defined by Moments, but thank you. Thank you for coming back as we are in the last third of this book, and we're going to get a rather large chunk of it today. As what we're going to look at is Proverbs chapter 20, really verses 5 through chapter 22 and verse 16. Now, we're not going to cover every single verse through this section, but the overall section could be entitled The Judgments. We're going to see how this section really starts with a heart, and based upon the condition of our heart, that is going to influence judgments that we make. When we get to the middle part of the section, we're going to see, you know, there's a focus on how we live. And again, we're going to be making judgments based upon the condition of our heart. And then finally, it ends with hope. And that hope, once again, depends upon the condition of our heart. So let's look at Proverbs chapter 20, specifically verse 5. The purpose in a man's heart is like deep waters, but a man of understanding will draw it out. So this aspect of a heart, it really shows what is there. And it's going to take effort, it's going to take work in order to be able to bring out those depths, which is why this is really an important section for us, because we have to look at the condition of our heart. You know, let's skip down to verse 7, and we're going to see very clearly that our decisions now will shape generations later. Verse 7 says, "The righteous who walks in his integrity, blessed are his children after him." So our choices that we make in our present will shape what happens in the future for us as well as for our children. So there it is. It's a judgment. We also see, looking down at verse 11, it says, "Even a child makes himself known by his acts, by whether his conduct is pure and upright." In other words, your choices, your judgments, reveal your character. They kind of unveil, they peel back the curtain so that we can truly see what's on the other side. And as we're thinking about our heart, really our heart is going to be either pro-good or it's going to be pro-evil. You think, well, that's kind of an odd way of saying it, Joel. Well, maybe, maybe not. Look at verse 14. It says, "Bad, bad," says the buyer, "but when he goes away, then he boasts." In other words, this individual is claiming one thing when in actuality it's another. They're lacking the integrity. They're not being truthful. So that's pro-evil. Look at verse 17 here. "Bread gained by deceit is sweet to the man, but afterward his mouth will be full of gravel." You might think you're taking a shortcut. You might think by defrauding other people, you're going to be able to gain something out of it. Ultimately, the only thing that you gain is bad things. The heart is going to be crushed by that. You know, we could continue this really digging further by looking at, you know, specifically at verse 10. "Unequal weights and unequal measures are both like an abomination to the Lord." Skip down to verse 23. What does that say? "Unequal weights are an abomination to the Lord, and false scales are not good." In other words, I've said this before because we've seen this pop up a couple of times in these latter sections of Proverbs. If it's mentioned once, it's really important. But if you see it twice in a short matter of time, it's something we better get a hold of. In this aspect of the unequal weights and the unjust weights, it's that someone is intentionally cheating another. So it's not just, it's not right, it's not fair, and that's the issue. But how do we correct that? We'll just look at one verse. Look at verse 26 here. It says, "A wise king winnows the wicked and drives the wheel over them." In other words, he looks and sees these evil things that are taking place, and if he is going to be a righteous, wise, and just ruler, then he's going to sift them and remove them from around. In other words, your choice to be pro-good or pro-evil will have implications, not just for you, but for others, and it all comes from the heart. That can really be summarized in one verse. Skip down to chapter 21, look at verse 4. "Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked, are sin." In other words, the thing that provides light, guidance, warmth, nourishment for the wicked, what is it? It's that proud heart. It's those arrogant eyes. And it leads them to sin. So the question that I have for you is, how are you? When you see something that's not right, do you say it's not right, or do you simply look the other way? Do you take a stand for what is good? Because ultimately, the question gets back to, what does your heart say? So that's the first part here. It starts with the heart. Secondly, it centers on how we live. Look at verses 16 and 17 in Proverbs 21. It says, "One who wanders from the way of good sense will rest in the assembly of the dead." You know, if we think about wandering away from the right path, this is a verse for us that should put up a big, giant neon sign that says, "Hold on, go no further." Look at the next verse. It says, "Whoever loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich." What this explains for us is the need for self-discipline. There's really nothing wrong with oil. There's really nothing wrong with wine in and of themselves, but overabundance in them creates significant problems. I love Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, but if I eat too many of them, that then starts to pack on pounds for me that creates issues for my health. So what this is talking about, how we live, we have to live self-disciplined lives. And in order for us to know what is the right thing to say yes to and what is the right thing to say no to, we have to have wisdom. So this is important. Self-discipline is how we need to live and show that we are rightly related to wisdom. So look down at verse 19. It says, "It is better to live in a desert land than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman." What is important here about how we live? It's our companions, those that we choose to spend the majority of our time with. In this instance, Solomon is speaking to his son and is referencing his wife in the future. But this can be broadened. This principle here is important. We have to be careful in who we choose to spend time with. The more that you're around folks, the more you become like them. So you need to truly evaluate, is that someone that I want to be like? And if the answer is no, then you need to step away. Look at 21 verses 23 and 24. "Whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps himself out of trouble. Scoffer is the name of the arrogant, haughty man who acts with arrogant pride." Man, that verse in 23, our world would be a much better place if we honestly learned this one. It's our words. One of the things that, you know, I've got a teenager that is very focused on what he believes is right and logic and reasoning. And if he has something in his mind that is logical, he is going to continue to talk rather than stopping and listening to what mom and dad has to say. And that is one of the things that we do, is you've got to stop talking. And we come back to this verse, "Whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps himself out of trouble." Far too often, we are talking when we should be listening. And if we do more listening and less talking, then we can get to the issues that really need to be resolved rather than just being focused on what I want, what I think. So my question to you is, what kind of words do you say? What comes out of your mouth? When should you be quiet, but you continue to talk? Those things show the condition of your heart. Go to chapter 22 and verse 1, one of my favorite verses here in the entire book of Proverbs. "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold." I know what you're thinking. Is this for real? Someone would honestly choose to have a good name rather than wealth? Man, if I had all the wealth in the world, I could buy a good name. No, you can't. You think you can, but you can't. The implication here is that your name or your reputation comes from wisdom or a lack of wisdom, and it all goes back to the heart. But think about this. When you're dead and gone, even if you were wealthy, when you're gone, what are people going to think about you? That's your name. That's your reputation. That's your legacy. That's what lives on beyond the time that you're gone. The money that you have worked so hard to earn and all that wealth and all those riches, what's going to happen? You're going to pass them to someone else. So the key here is to live for what matters, not for what we think matters. So we see the heart, we see how we need to live, and then finally we're going to close with hope. Look at verse 4 of chapter 22. The reward for humility. So again, this is the opposite side of the arrogant and the fools that we have talked about. The reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. The fear of the Lord changes everything. Now, I want to make sure that I say something very clearly here, because there are folks that will take this verse, will twist it, and make it say something that it does not say. This does not say that if you become a Christian, your life's going to be easy, you're going to have all the wealth in the world that you can imagine, you're going to be prosperous, and no one can ever come against you. That's not what this says. What this is saying is that if you fear the Lord, if you put your trust in Him, if you see Him for who He is, and you let that knowledge change who you are so that you live a life of wisdom, then you're going to have riches and honor and life. But the riches and the honor and life that you have will be completely different than the riches and the honor and the life that the world offers. That is a very important distinguishing factor. So the fear of the Lord changes several things. Number one, it changes our actions. Look at verse 5. Thorns and snares are in the way of the crooked. Whoever guards his soul will keep far from them. If we fear the Lord, this right here is very clearly telling us we're going to have some thorns and snares in our life, but we'll be able to see them and then get away from them. Instead of us not fearing the Lord, and we could care less about those thorns and snares, and we go right into them. The second thing that the fear of the Lord changes is our approvals. Look at verse 6. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. You're thinking, wait a minute, Joel. How does this have anything to do with approvals? Skip down to verse 15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. You're thinking, oh, Joel, wait a minute. This is talking about disciplining children. This has nothing to do with our approvals. I disagree. It has everything to do with our approvals. Why? Because what you ignore today becomes normal tomorrow. So if you're a parent and you love those children and you see them developing habits that are not good, then what do you have to do? You've got to break the habit. You know, all of us have run into this situation with our children as they're getting older. They're 2 or 3 years old and they want to put that hand up on top of the stove, and you tell them, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And they reject that, and what do? They throw that hand up there, and it's hot, and it gets burned. Well, you immediately care for them, but you have to train them not to do that. It's that aspect of we need to get them to the point that they respect and fear the Lord. And when they do that, everything else will fall into place. This aspect of disciplining a child and getting folly out of them is to make sure that you, as a parent, are approving good behavior and disproving poor behavior. You are the one that assists them with the behavior modification. The key that we have to make sure that we understand is that discipline is correction. It is change of behavior. It's not just compliance. You've got to get to the heart of the matter. Again, it goes back to everything that we talked about. What's in the heart drives how we live. And it's how we live that shows whether we have hope. The last thing, the fear of the Lord changes our attitude. Look at verse 16. Whoever oppresses the poor to increase his own wealth or gives to the rich will only come to poverty. Now, what does this have to do with attitude? Because the thought process for this individual, I'm going to oppress the poor. Those that really don't have anything for me to give, I'm going to squeeze every dime and nickel out of them that I can. That's an attitude. Or if you're going to take that and give to the rich because you think you're going to ingratiate yourself with them and they're going to want you to be around, what does it say? Not only are you going to be hated by the poor, The wealthy are going to find out what you did, and they're going to look down upon you, and ultimately you will come to poverty. It's your attitude that makes the difference. If you have a positive attitude and a positive outlook on life, it changes everything. Someone has made the comment that attitude is life's paintbrush. It colors every situation. I love that. And the attitude that we see in this verse is one that paints a very dark picture, not just for the individuals that are being defrauded, but for the one that thinks it's going to give them what they want. And then ultimately they are going to find out they were wrong. So this was a very quick overview of the section, but we've got a couple of things that we need to stop and talk about. Before we get to our major lessons here, let's go to one verse as the key verse. I think this one summarizes everything very nicely, and it's Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 30. No wisdom, no understanding, no counsel can avail against the Lord. Really, if you look at this in Hebrew, you will not necessarily find this aspect of can avail. So that verse would literally read, no wisdom, understanding, or counsel against the Lord. What does that mean? If we are seeking wisdom, if we are seeking understanding, if we are seeking counsel and advice, the only place you can find it is through Jesus Christ. It's through God. And it goes back again, you know where I'm going, with that thesis that Solomon started with in Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Wisdom, understanding, and counsel, it's in the heart. And if we want it, that means that we need God in our heart. And if God is in our heart, then guess what? Folks are going to be able to see that through our lives, and then we will have hope that others will come to us and inquire, where did you get this? And for us, it comes down to a judgment. We are going to judge him more worthy than the things of this world, than the wealth that this world offers, or we're going to judge that wealth more important than him. Whatever that initial judgment is in the heart, it will work its way out in the life, and it will be shown through the hope that we have or the lack of hope. So let's look at really three summaries here. Number one, your external stance on good and evil comes from an internal settlement about good and evil. Let me say that again. Your external stance on good and evil, so that your public image that others folks know about you of good and evil, comes from an internal settlement about good and evil. That's the judgment that you make. If you say one thing and do something else, there is an immediate judgment that's made about you. So you have to settle in your heart whether you want wisdom, understanding, and counsel. If the answer is yes, then you have to go to God in order to receive that. Secondly, your future is formed by who you follow. We saw the example, you know, mentioned here earlier. If you're hanging around these individuals that are defrauding the poor to make themselves look good, you're eventually going to start doing that. If you're always around individuals that are angry or that are quarrelsome, you're going to pick up those traits. Ultimately, the choice is yours. You make the judgment, and if you want to be like them, then go hang around them. If not, then you're going to say no, and then you're going to avoid the traps, you're going to avoid the thorns, and you're going to stay in the right way, the path of sense. So ultimately, you make a judgment, and that future is formed by the judgments that you make now. And then finally, the one thing that we have to understand, that we have to hold on to, is there is a single source of truth. It's not earthly in origin, because it is eternal. That is not a very popular thing to say today. In our world, there's a lot of existentialist thought that, hey, every man can find their own way. Every person can decide what's good and right, and there's no preconceived path for anyone. That sounds great, but all that produces is chaos. But there is a single source of truth, and that single source of truth comes from fearing the Lord. I will go back to this one verse because it sets the stage for every judgment that you will ever make. Proverbs 21 and verse 30. No wisdom, no understanding, no counsel can avail against the Lord. Thank you for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back in the not-too-distant future, and you take care.